Hi, this is Christopher Daniel Barnes, and I was the voice of Spider-Man on Spider-Man, the animated series, and you're listening to the Amazing Spider Talk.
Too many who know the angles, uncover and untangle all the questions and the webs left out to tangle. Be it 1962, last Wednesday's afternoon, they'll bend your ears with reckless self-abandon. The Amazing Spider-Talk, The Amazing Spider-Talk, come swing through the air, sit back and prepare for The Amazing Spider-Talk.
Hello and welcome to The Amazing Spider Talk. My name is Dan Gavazdin, and I'm the founder and editor of SuperiorSpiderTalk.com.
Yes, Dan, and I'm Mark Giannacchio, the founder of the Chasing Amazing blog and currently an editor at SuperiorSpiderTalk.com. Why are you laughing, Dan? I can see you on the other side of the computer.
Well, you're very enthusiastic about your intro there, but yes, thank you, everybody, for joining us for this special Essentials episode of Amazing Spider Talk, our 25th one, Mark.
Oh, my goodness. Are we almost done?
We are almost done. Five to go. We hope you enjoyed.
I thought we were going to pick 10 each. We're up to 25?
Yep. We did 15 each. Well, we hope all you fans out there enjoy this podcast and that it provides an intelligent conversation between two fans and collectors as we look at the Spider-Man comic universe in a bit of a bigger picture.
Yeah, for this episode, we'll be discussing my pick for the Essential Spider-Man comic, which is Heroes Don't Cry, also known as Peter Parker Spider-Man number 35 by Paul Jenkins and Mark Buckingham. Then we'll have a quickie Swarms B-title reviews, and then we'll head on home.
All right, Mark, I can safely say that I'm no hero because the story Heroes Don't Cry made me cry. But does it have the power to make our essentials list? Let's find out.
Wow, Dan, that was some tortured logic, but I love it.
So, Mark, Heroes Don't Cry, number 35 of that awesome Paul Jenkins, Mark Buckingham run. Why, of all of their awesome comics, why this one for The Essential? We talked about another one of their comics.
Yeah, I think that was one of your picks, right?
Yeah. But this is, I think, it's a good pick, too. But why Essential for this one?
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of like with the comic we talked about with you. And then also with Kid Who Collects Comic Books, Kid Who Collects Spider-Man, which I know was one of yours as well. I guess this was kind of like my representation from that group. You know, I think what distinguishes that comic from some of these other kind of relating the real world to Spider-Man ones is, you know, sometimes with those other comics, there's kind of this level of self-awareness to them that can make it feel a little too cute. But I mean, for me, I still think it's important in a story that's kind of as big and all-encompassing as Spider-Man to have these moments where we acknowledge why it's important that Spider-Man exists both in the fictional world but in the real world. Mm-hmm. And that's what this comic does. In a lot of ways, it's kind of like a edgier, rawer version of Kid Who Collects Spider-Man. I think it's actually a little more culturally relevant than Kid Who Collects, at least today. You know, Heroes Don't Cry for the uninitiated. You know, we're kind of focusing on an inner city child And I hope I'm not using inner city the way that certain politicos are these days. You know, he's a young black boy in a broken family, you know, mother who seems to be on drugs and involved with crime and whatnot. But you know, it's his connection to Spider-Man that kind of keeps him motoring and keeps him thriving. And, you know, he kind of has imagined this relationship with Spider-Man, which is kind of a much different take than what you get with Kid Who Collects, where, I mean, you know, our understanding in that comic book was Tim Harrison actually had that, interaction. It was real, in terms of that comic, where this is, you know, we are under the impression this is more in the mind, which I think in its own way is kind of more relatable today, where I think, you know, children who are struggling in various ways, who maybe glom onto certain heroes. I mean, I guess they kind of imagine that, you know, they have these relationships or, you know, it's the lessons that they learn from these heroes that what's helped them out. And so, like, from that reason, I kind of like felt like it feels very, very culturally connected and aware and relevant. And then I guess like the last thing that I saw that made this get on my essential list was, you know, and granted, we saw this more, it manifests itself with Miles Morales when he showed up in 2011. But, you know, one of the big messages of Spider-Man and what has made Spider-Man unique for so many people is this idea that because of the fact that he's this masked character whose secret identity is such an essential part to the character, that, you know, big part of the mythology is that anybody can be under that mask. And you know, that was definitely realized in Miles when it was a half African-American, half Latino or half Hispanic individual was the new Spider-Man. And in terms of Heroes Don't Cry, it's very on the nose in terms of, you know, when the child meets his Spider-Man in the flesh and that character takes his mask off, it's another black man who is Spider-Man. And, you know, I think like that has always been a part of Spider-Man, is why so many people relate to him, is because he really can be anybody. It's you can see anybody there. It doesn't have to be, you know, a white, brown haired teenager. You know, it could be an adult. It could be whatever. So the fact that like that all of these elements are so artfully and kind of with irreverence are represented in this comic, I felt like this is one of those things that, given where we are in the world and what's going on, like, I think like it's important to have a comic like this in there. And I think it's important to have a comic like that in the list. Now that sounds like very tortured logic. I apologize, but it's kind of like, this is one of those comics that transcends comics to me, which might make it sometimes maybe not as easy to, verbalize for a list like this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you said it better than I ever could. You know, I've read this comic twice this year, even before we decided to put it on the list. I was rereading, Jenkins and I guess largely Mark Buckingham's run, and it's just full of titles like this. And this one really, you know, even more than Uncle Ben in Baseball and all that stuff, this one really stands out. It's very emotionally powerful. And when I was reading it this week to talk about it, you know, I was reading it next to my fiance, and I kept like pointing over to her, like, about, you should check this out. You know, like this book is really more than just kind of like capes and things. Oh, I guess Spider-Man is never about capes, but you know,
right.
There's a real world thing to this. And I think about the Amazing Spider-Man 2 movie. The one scene I'm always championing where the kid in the alleyway is about to get beat up by the bullies and Spider-Man springs down and saves him. And then it's like, tell me about your art project, what you're working on. You know, this has kind of got that similar thing where it's like, this is truly the heart of why Spider-Man is powerful as a figure in the comics and also as like, I guess like in the real world, but it's also kind of the essence of why people read superhero fiction as like an escape. And that's kind of literalized in this case, although this in here it's a card that he has of Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
That is kind of his entry point. And my entry point to Spider-Man was also cards. I collected the, you know, Marvel Fleer Ultra and all of that stuff, and the 1992 Galaxy collection and all that stuff. Mm. That was my entry point to the character too. So there's something special about that.
I was going to say, like, I really like the meta awareness of this comic, and that this kid's connection to Spider-Man is not the comics, because I think for the vast majority of the world, their connection to superheroes isn't comic books. I mean, it hasn't been since the early 90s, probably, right?
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, I mean, most people we talk to that are like our age, their entry point was probably, you know, John Semper Jr.'s TV show.
That, right.
You know, 90s Spider-Man show.
Yeah, exactly. You mean your age.
Oh, come on.
I'm probably still stuck on the comics, but no, actually my entry point for Spider-Man were Secret Wars action figures.
Yeah.
I mean they were not the comics. I mean, I had action figures first, and that's what made me get comics.
God, Mark, you're so old.
I know,
you
right?
You didn't have TV when you were a kid.
I know, right?
you just saw lights flickering on the walls of your cave, right?
Exactly. But no, I really, you know, we talked to Paul Jenkins on the show many moons ago, and he's probably someone we would love to have back at some point, just because, you know, what we know now versus what we know then.
I think that was in our like first 10 episodes.
Yeah, exactly. But the fact of the matter was, I mean, he was someone in terms of, you know, I feel Paul was disenchanted by the norms of the current comic book industry and how it tries to hook new readers in. And, you know, I think his attitude is it doesn't hook new readers in. It's really just kind of caters to hardcore readers. Yeah, I, you know, using that information and then kind of like reading it in companion with this comic, it's like, yeah, of course it would be a trading card for this kid, because, you know, what little boy in a kind of crappy situation at home has time to read all of the current machinations of the clone conspiracy Dead No More Spider-Man when they just have it from a trading card. So I actually really, really love that in retrospect. Among other things with this comic. What else? Just talk to me some more. I feel like you actually kind of discovered these comics in real time, whereas I a lot of these comics kind of were in that in-between zone for me as a reader when I was like in and out of Spider-Man. So even though this is my pick, I almost feel like you have a more closer connection to it than I do.
Yeah, I mean, Jenkins' run alongside like Straczynski was kind of my like welcome back point into the world of Spider-Man. I think I was so disconnected from Amazing. You know, I tried picking it up at the relaunch of, you know, Volume 2 and was so disappointed with that like Peter Parker Spider-Man jumped out to me. And that was, yeah, I mean, that and Straczynski's what hooked me back. But I would say Jenkins is kind of what got me collecting again. I bought this regularly, and I remember reading this book when it came out, and like, you know how it is, a good book comes out, and I feel like I was a lot like this during Brand New Day, where it's like something totally just, you know, sideline, you know, it catches you in a blind spot, you know? You open this book and you have no idea what to think about it. You weren't expecting it in any way. You know, in the same way that Brand New Day, every other week it was some bizarre new tale that you weren't prepped for. This is before I was reading solicits and all that stuff. So this was a genuine, like, thrill and the kind of thing that you want to share with people.
Yeah.
As to the content in it, I mean, I don't know how politically aware I was at the time. I think I was probably a pretty naive person. But you can't help but connect to this young boy's tale and, you know, that of his mother. And while it's kind of cliche, I would say, the way that Jenkins writes it and the dialogue is so full of heart that you quickly overlook that.
Yeah, and there are little things that he does that I feel that kind of like overwrite the cliches of the boy's story itself. Like, I mean, one of the things that I really love and I kind of like caught on to more so when I just reread it for this episode was like how even before we unmask the Spider-Man in this comic, like his dialect and just his overall demeanor, Spider-Man's, is like so foreign, but like it also feels so genuine and for this boy, like so necessary. Because again, like this is how this boy has envisioned Spider-Man. And like, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter that he's not talking, like he doesn't talk like Roger Stern or Tom DeFalco Spider-Man, because that's not who this kid Spider-Man is. And like, again, to the larger point of this comic, I you know, Spider-Man is so much bigger than anyone's Spider-Man. And, you know, I feel like we talk about that a lot. I feel like Dan, you and I try and rise above that, but this sense of, you know, ownership of who Spider-Man should be and has to be and will always be. And this comic kind of thumbs its nose in the face of that idea and does it in a way with that has so much heart and authenticity that I think to disagree with it almost makes you a bad person. you know what I mean? Like who are you to disagree with that? If this boy in the span of this one issue becomes so real and so sympathetic and so tragic that if you're really going to disagree with how he sees Spider-Man, I think there's something wrong with you. I really do. I mean, it's like,
yeah, that's a good point. You know, this character is so, and his world is so fleshed out. It's the kind of thing I almost wish there was more of it. I don't know that it could sustain 2 issues, but I do think that like getting to actually the meat and potatoes of the issue, and the plot contained within, you know, it kind of gets involved with like his counselor and his like aunt and uncle who want to adopt him and so on. And I do think the story wraps up a little too quickly, in the end with his mother kind of passing away or not passing away. She gets killed. That's kind of all not seated particularly, strongly, but you don't really care because that final page is just such a wow. Like, if anything was deserving of a splash, that final page is. Maybe one of the best splash pages in all of Spider-Man comics. I think one of the moments that stands out to me, talking about people being bad people, is I love the moment where the counselor that they've been talking to says over the phone to them that he's doing all that he can to help the kid, only to reveal that he's headed out on the golf course. And I think about this image a lot and the sentiment, I guess, behind it and Paul Jenkins kind of criticism behind it. Because I think we live in a culture where, like, I mean, I guess today, not when this book came out, but where posting to Facebook, like, for most people is enough to claim that they're engaged with making the world a better place. And the most they can do to make the world a better place is to say that they tried without actually trying at all. And I think while it might be represented here in a somewhat arch way, that cultural critique of this moment and the entire issue, it still stings every time I read it. It's really sharp, really spot on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, like, this comic is very ahead of its time. I think, like, yeah, I don't know if 10 years ago I'm picking this comic, if that makes sense. But I feel like now more than ever it's critical on a lot of levels. I mean, you know, like, I feel that the rise of Miles Morales makes this comic an essential one because it kind of, like, it seeds that idea, you know what I mean? Like this idea that Spider-Man doesn't have to be what Stan Lee and Steve Ditko saw Spider-Man as. I mean, what do you, like, tell me about that for you. I mean, like, this idea, like, I don't know. Let's not dance around it, Dan. We're two white kids from suburbia. You know what I mean? Like, we saw Spider-Man a certain way, but, like, do you think you know people who saw Spider-Man differently?
I'm sure I do. I mean, I talk to them all the time, even if it's the difference is just, you know, like, even if they're the same as me, a white kid from suburbia, everybody has their own interpretation of the character. And you know, people get into fights with us all the time, disagreeing with us because they, you know, they see the character different than we do. And that's totally fine. Everybody's allowed their own interpretation. Even Dan Slott has a different interpretation of the character. And I think that's often where we come to blows with him. And, you know, I think it's always wise to take a step back from that and be like, you know what? Like, you're allowed your own interpretation of the character. But then there's also people like Ron Frenz, whose interpretation of the character is going back to his essence. You know, it's why there's some creators that we think really get it, because they, like, they look towards the past. But specifically in this instance, yeah. I mean, I think that's a large part of the appeal of the character. And I'm not sure if at the time reading this comic I picked up on the idea that, like, Spider-Man could be anybody under that full mask, you know. But I think it was, like, Bendis's TED Talk speech that kind of put that idea most, formally in my mind. But yeah, that final page, it can't help but spark ideas about who is Spider-Man and what does he mean and who can he be.
Yeah. Do you feel, you know, we talked about this with Kid Ukulak, that there was kind of like a gut punch and with the reveal in there, and that it was like earned versus unearned. You know, the kind of twist of tragedy in this storyline with the mother dying, and do you feel that this is all earned, or you know, do you feel that there are some cheats here in this storyline?
I think it's earned. I mean, I think it's earned because both kids are so fully fleshed out as individuals. I think LaFrance is probably even more fleshed out than Tim Harrison as a character. Because not only do we, you know, both of them are kind of children who are reacting or stuck with fate. Like, both of them aren't, you know, like, necessarily active characters in their destiny. You know, like, they've been dealt a bad, you know, deck of cards, so to speak.
Right.
But, like, LaFrance, like, we don't only see, you know, what, you know, he, like, his kind of, like, I guess, always renewable optimism in the face, and perhaps blind naivete in the face of what's going on, or just youthful naivete. But what I like about this book is that we're allowed access to his dreams, you know, and there's a great scene with his aunt and uncle when they visit the counselor and see his drawings that he does of his family, and the, I guess, the airplanes and stuff like that, and it's all kind of like an interesting, it speaks to this kind of damaged psyche that this kid has.
Definitely. All right. Do you have any other big thoughts on this one, Dan?
What do you think about Mark Buckingham?
Oh, I mean, I think he's probably one of the most underrated Spider-Man artists that we've had over the last 20 years. I mean, like, you know, you look in a vacuum, and I guess there's nothing that individually that truly stands out about his work. And yet when you then look individually issue by issue, and then in the context of certain stories, like, it's just like, there's just so much emotion and sincerity to what he ends up illustrating. And maybe that has a lot to do with the stories that Jenkins was doing. But with that said, I think that Jenkins was at his best with Mark Buckingham. No offense to Humberto Ramos. I mean, like, most of my favorite Jenkins stories were with Mark Buckingham, because it's just like, you know, Jenkins was such a cerebral writer to have this artist alongside him that just conveyed these emotions and made you feel for these characters because of how real he made them in their world. That's everything to me.
And he goes back to the kind of Ditko 9-panel pages too. Like, yeah, everything is broken down in very, you know, specific, sequential, boxy images. There's something very classic about it that I think, you know, goes along with Jenkins's writing, this kind of very formalized artistic style.
Definitely.
It's a great issue. If you haven't read it, I mean, I don't know what you're listening to us for. Go read it.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Dan. Well, why don't we move on to some current issues?
S-W-A-R-M.
S-W-A-R-M.
A reanimated Nazi skeleton.
A reanimated Nazi skeleton.
Reviewing B titles while he's covered in bees.
Reviewing B titles while he's covered in bees.
Actually, he's permanently covered in bees.
Actually, he's permanently covered in bees.
He's coming for this podcast. He's coming for you.
He's coming for this podcast. He's coming for you.
It's time for Swarms B title reviews.
It's time for Swarms B title reviews.
Welcome, Dan and Mark. It's your old friend Swarm back. I don't have a terrible lot to say today, but I just wanted to mention that I have been hanging out with some friends of mine in Russia, and they might have hacked your podcast recently to help elect me to your new B title review. I hope you're okay with that.
I'm amazed that you're admitting that, Swarm. That seems like something you would probably want to deny and keep under wraps.
But does it matter if I deny it? Because I'm here.
I guess we are stuck with you no matter what. Well, Swarm, are you going to be buzzing around for this episode?
It's like, what are you going to do? Get some electoral college to deny me? Come on.
That's not the system.
Uh-huh, exactly. Exactly. What are you going to... You're going to have a recount? You're going to get some Green Party person to have your recount for you? Come on. I'm here, and we're going to talk B-titles, because that is the buzz. Atone!
Well, you were just stunned into silence during that.
I know. Well, you know, oftentimes... Well, you got to remember... When Swarm comes over and starts taking over the microphone, I'm not just dealing with Swarm. I'm also dealing with bees. So I kind of like clear out. It's only when he like gets extra feisty that I have to like kind of stick my nose in it, you know?
Do you think they have bees in Russia?
Well, you know, do they believe in global warming in Russia? Probably not. So... The bees might be dead. The bees might be dead. They might be dead here in America soon, too. That's
like in
okay.
North Carolina with the spraying for Zika?
So anyway, there weren't a ton of new books out between the last few recordings. There were actually new Champions and Avengers books, which we talked about at length last time out. So I figured we should do that.
And were both
great. Yeah, they're both great. Spider-Man 2099 is still kicking, and Dan, like, I don't know, this book isn't bothering me lately, and I don't know if that means that I'm just like lowering the bar or what, but like this whole connection with the Fist and Elektra and like kind of like this mystery angle and Miguel teaming up specifically with Elektra. I feel there's a fun dynamic there. Do you have any thoughts on this storyline currently, or are you just so done with this book?
I'm so done with this book. It's funny because you're telling me what happened in it. I'm like, oh yeah, that is going on. Like the minute I put this book down, I forget what happened in this book. It is like, I agree. It's nice that it's kind of all coming back together and working towards what seems to be an eventual end. There's just so much nonsense going on. I can't keep it straight anymore. Liz Allen is back. I don't know what she's been up to. Last time we saw her was probably 20 plus issues ago. I guess she's working for Alchemax. Great.
Don't forget, Ty Stone is around too.
Yeah, he's a character that exists apparently.
He's there. So, in other words, you can't wait for Peter David to write Ben Reilly.
No, I can wait. I can wait all. I mean, that is not for sure, but
that's
strong...
the thing. You know, say what you will about everything, but like, I feel like we were talking about this earlier about in a vacuum, not in a vacuum. Like in a vacuum, I actually do like Peter David's writing when he's like making, like linking all these things together and making it work. It's unfortunately, I feel that this book itself and by proxy, Peter David and Will Sliney, they just get so tangentially off. And I don't know if it's because of mandated crossovers or what, but it's like this is such an incredibly unfocused book. But when it does maintain its focus for more than just one or two issues at a time, I actually find it to be quite good. So I don't know what that ultimately means for the next Peter David book or this Peter David book, but, you know, the ability to spin a yarn is to me still there. Unfortunately, it's just like, I don't know. It just seems so. It takes so little to knock it off course.
I feel the same way about this book as I felt about his Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man title. It's just that had like, you know, all the various future Spider-Man and Uncle Ben's from alternate dimensions. I feel like he's got like, again, he's got all these crazy ideas and they're fun to read for sure. Like you said, it can, you know, it just as soon as you feel like you understand something, you're going down a completely different direction. And this is all like couched within some A story you haven't touched on in like 40 issues that like, if you give him the benefit of the doubt, he will get back there. I don't know if he loses people along the way. His book still sells pretty well. So people are waiting to see that resolution.
Yeah. Which is just, I find to be odd because it's like, I don't know who's still buying this book. I don't know anybody besides you and I who talks about this book still, Dan.
It just seems so inessential.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was a period where I not that I felt that this was the best book of the lot, but like, you know, it was just so amazing that we finally had 2099 back again. And that was like 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
So, you know, there you go. All right. And is that the extent of our B-book review?
I mean, that's the only title that came out other than those Avengers books. And I thought those were great. I mean, the Kang stuff is so much fun.
Yeah, Kang is one of my favorites. When I was writing for What Culture, Dan, I had a running joke that Kang was always great. And I still maintain that thought. And I still think Champions is great too. I would urge people to read Champions. I think you're a little less into it than I am, but just like, you know, as a general rule, I think like this is kind of like the youthful counterculture book that we've been waiting for in that regard.
Yeah, I think Champions in this third issue has really kind of found its voice for what it's going to be doing. I just get a little uncomfortable when like superheroes go in to solve real world problems without like it being a thing. You know, like I'm going to go liberate, you know, women in Muslim culture. And it's like, I feel like it kind of does a disservice to all the people that are working and dying to do that in the real world by like kind of snapping your fingers to solve it. It's just kind of weird to me. It's not that I don't like it. It makes me a little uncomfortable.
And you're not far off on that, Dan.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Why don't you take us home, Dan?
Yeah. Well, of course, you can find all of our new amazing Spider Talk and old Superior Spider Talk podcasts at SuperiorSpiderTalk.com or find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and most recently on YouTube by searching for Amazing Spider Talk. And if you do, please be sure to leave us a rating and a comment to let us know how we're doing, and we'll read it on the air. It's been a while since we've gotten one, so you know, please keep them coming. If you have any opinions on the comic we talked about today or any questions, please be sure to email them to us at AmazingSpiderTalk@gmail.com or call us at 9RedGoblin, which, you know, is not going to be a cool thing anymore because I was not right about the man in red being the goblin. or tweet at us with the hashtag OKToPrint, and we'll read and address those on the air as well.
Yeah, you lose, Dan. Also, be sure to check out both our Facebook pages and subscribe to our brother podcast, The Ultimate Spin, to keep up with the adventures of Spider-Gwen and Miles Morales.
And also, don't forget to check out the Friendly Neighborhood Spider Talk Members Club that helps support our show and allows you to win great prizes like the giveaway we did last week. On next week's show, Mark, we're going to be talking about Amazing Spider-Man number 22, which is the backstory to how Ben Reilly became the Man in Red. So I know that there's a lot of anticipation and, I guess, high stakes. And Dan Slott's got a lot to prove in one issue. So I hope you'll be there to join us for that discussion next week.
Yeah, or roundabouts next week, since we're going to be running up against the Christmas holidays next week.
Yes, so, you're right. That is true. So we'll get to it eventually. Just
yeah, bear with us, people.
Bear with us, yeah.
And remember, it's the holidays, and we travel and see family and try and do things.
You mean this isn't what we do, Mark? We don't trap ourselves in a room all year and talk Spider-Man comics?
If it was that simple, Dan, life would be easier.
All right, Mark, where can we read more about you on the internet?
Yeah, well, of course, you can find me on Twitter at ChasingASMBlog, and you can find me on our wonderful, wonderful website, SuperiorSpiderTalk.com. Check out The Lost Gems. Check out my review of Amazing Spider-Man number 22. And, you know, just check out all the other wonderful things. And check out my old archives at ChasingAmazingBlog.com. And of course, you know, go to Amazon.com and pre-order my book, 100 Things Spider-Man fans Must Know or Do Before They Die. It's coming, people, in June, but you can order it now.
It makes it's a good Christmas gift. And there's a big link on SuperiorSpiderTalk.com for that book.
Yeah, so do it. Do it, people. Do it. Now. Now. Anyway. Where are you on the internet, Dan?
Oh, thanks for asking, Mark.
Come on.
You can find me on Twitter at SupSpiderTalk, or as Mark said earlier, at SuperiorSpiderTalk.com. Wishing you all a potential Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whatever. Who knows when the next show is going to be? We will be finding out soon. anyway, guys, Mark.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't talked much lately.
That's a lie.
Yeah, I know. But I hear your Uncle Ben is doing just fine. You know, he's trimming his roses for the holidays, making his ties as gifts.
Yeah.
You know, he even went to the
mob
Zoom.
Ties.
Well, yeah. His mob ties, yeah. And, you know, you guys go to the zoo and you saw the chimpanzees there. And and he was hanging out with his friend Jimmy.
Joey.
You know, nothing could possibly go wrong with that. Do you just want to tell me about his favorite quote and call it a day? Everything seems to be going so fine.
Yeah, it's a great day. You know, he was trimming his roses, and, you know, he had to sharpen his shears, and he did. And nothing happened. And then, you know, when we were at the zoo, he went to go throw a couple of peanuts at the monkeys. And, you know, as he was throwing, the momentum of the throw kind of almost took him over the gate into the pen.
But Harambe, no.
Nah, he's fine. Nothing happened. Come on.
Oh,
like,
good.
You see how high those gates are? And even Jimmy the Elbow, like, you know, like the mob ties, Jimmy the Elbow, you know, he made him a great tie. And Jimmy was like, this is exactly the tie I was looking for the holidays. Uncle Ben, I'm going to let you be. No horrible death this week. And Uncle Ben was like, phew. And then, you know, so Uncle Ben decided to take the bus to the grocery store to, you know, get some things. And no, he's not going to die. I'm not going to tell that story this week, people. Just know that he's on the bus. And, you know, he said, with great podcasts must also come amazing spider talk. And then the bus went on fire and he died.
Don't miss the next installment. Catch your feet, hit the next.